This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing the half of it. So if you haven't seen it, I highly suggest you do. You might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time. Oh, are you ready for One Dry Kiss?
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where in the month of September, we are doing Growing Pains. And today, we are continuing that theme with the movie The Half of It. Wow! And I am here with Miss Tamara Cosio, my podcast host and bestie, who can do no wrong in my eyes because she is a triple threat of talent, smarts, and beauty. Once again, Miss Tamara Cosio.
My God, do you want to borrow money? What are you? Why? This is unfounded, my goodness. And I am here with the other half of me, the other half of it, the other half of my life, my bestie, Corinne Edding.
Aww.
My hetero life mate.
Yes, definitely. My boss man is going to Hawaii.
I don't want to hear this. I really don't want to hear this. I don't. So we were talking about it before we started, gentle listeners. Go ahead, Corinne. I'm just, hold on. Let me steel myself to be jealous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not going to Hawaii. I'm.
Oh, what? Mm-mm.
Mm-hmm. 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 But I am getting, he is covering my the vacation days that he's taking. So that's nice. There it is. But you know what? I'm really like goodly jealous for you because you went on a little vacay with your man.
Mm-hmm. We had a staycation. We sure did. Last couple of days, I'm like, I need a lazy river and I need it stat.
Yes.
So we found this hotel with a lovely lazy river, a swim up bar, and then an adults only pool. I'm sure there was equal amounts of pee in all of them, but we went, we floated, we swam. It was very relaxing. And then we went to San Diego and did a ghost hunting tour, which was very disappointing.
Aww. So you didn't like break into a dance to, I ain't afraid of no ghost.
I wish. Well, actually, I did, but nobody understood the reference because everybody there was in their 20s. But still. Yeah, it was in Heritage Park in San Diego, and they had all these really cool old Victorian houses. And so the ghost hunting tour was basically the lady that guided us through, gave us history on the houses and said, go ahead and take a look at them. Get close if you want. And I'm like, that's it? Like, we just stand outside? We don't get to go inside? Okay, so we could have, like, done this ourselves, minus the $35 per person. Okay,
right.
Great.
Yeah. Oh.
And she was like being very friendly and encouraging. Did you see anything? Did you catch anything? And I was like, no. Okay. The next house. Did you have any luck? No. Oh, okay. How about now? Did you have any experiences? Lady, we are outside at 7 p.m. There's like people playing frisbee with their dog over here.
Yeah.
Like it's not super spooky. I'm sorry to say.
It's daylight out. Did she give you like ghost catchers or something like that? Because...
MVPs. They had dowry rods, like the ones that kind of like you can ask questions. And then she had probably the best thing was cat toys that, you know, after you set them down, she's like, sometimes if the spirits touch it, it'll start glowing again. So you can take these cat toys and put them down. And if there's a spirit around, then they'll start jiggling lights. And I'm like, all right, I'll bite. Yeah, no. No kitty cat toy glowing. The dowry rods were just trying to smack Larry in the head, which was really interesting. The EVP, she also had like one of those EVP that senses electromagnetic fields or whatever. Yeah. And there was like a 9-year-old little girl that had that thing held tight in her hand and did not give it up the whole time. So nobody else got to play with it, but that was fine.
Oh, they need to have more than one of those. My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, here, you get the one EVP. Everybody else, here's some cat toys. Thanks.
Yes, exactly. Well, Well, she said usually, and this is probably a crock of shit now that I think about it, she goes, the best experiences we've had have actually come from people and their cameras and what they capture when they take pictures. So I was just taking pictures of everything everywhere, like all over the place.
Yeah.
And there was a few times, because all of the one shitty thing too was that the windows were all boarded, like covered with canvas. So you couldn't even see inside the house.
Oh my gosh.
Except for a few, like, oh, there's a mailbox slot that you can put your phone through, or there's like a rip in this canvas here that you can see inside the house. And so I was just like taking pictures like crazy, and Larry's like, what are you going to do with those? And I was like, I'm going to take them home and enhance and see what I could see, which was a whole lot of nothing. But I'm still a believer, even though I've never had an experience outside of the ones I had with my father after he passed away. Yeah. But I'm still hopeful. Hopefully that I will be able to have a spirit sighting and have it not follow me home. Just like, hi, how you doing? You stay there. I'm going to leave. Feel free to linger in this area your whole entire life.
Well, we still have yet to go to a medium together, which is something that we've talked about doing.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. I do have to say the one interesting phenomenon that I've never had happen after we went to, I had like probably 36 photographs of, you know, the various houses mm-hmm. and inside, outside of them. And I was like kind of looking through them today on my lunch break, and I was like, there's nothing there. So I put my phone down and I was just checking my hair before I went downstairs to go to the bathroom or whatever. And I've never had this happen. Is that while my phone was sitting there, usually it just fades to black and doesn't do anything, yeah. just whatever. But it took a picture of me as I was getting up and leaving, which is fine because sometimes the motion detector goes off. But then it took 17 pictures of my empty office while I was gone. It just like kept snapping pictures.
Oh my God, and this is so crazy.
I know that it snapped like a picture of me when I came back to my desk, and I was like, oh, that's weird. It's still on. It must have whatever. And then I looked and I'm like, it took like 17 pictures of nothing in my office. That's weird.
It's your dad. Oh my gosh. He's like, peeps, you don't need to be looking for ghosts. I am here.
No, that was just a creepy phenomenon that did happen to happen after my little ghost hunting tryst.
Now that we've had your extra, the word that keeps on popping in my head is terrestrial, which is not the right word.
Paranormal.
Thank you. Your paranormal experience. Now that we've had
extra paranormal.
Your extra paranormal tree experience. Tam, are you going to tempt us with your tasty to synopsis?
I do have a tasty to synopsis, Corinne.
Ooh.
And here it is. Ellie Chu, played by Leah Lewis, is a Chinese immigrant. She lives in the small town of Squamish with their father, who's been despondent ever since his wife/her mom died a few years prior. Ellie does what she needs to get by, like writing essays for classmates at $20 a pop, managing the household, and taking over engineering responsibilities when her father can't. One day, her writing abilities are sought out by Paul Munsky, played by Daniel Dimer. He has caught the strong feels for a sweet, popular girl named Aster Flores, played by Alexis Lemire, but knows he can't articulate himself very well and needs Ellie to draft a love letter to convey his feelings. Desperate for cash, Ellie reluctantly agrees, but one love letter turns into several with the accompanying texts and messages, and before Ellie knows it, she's also catching the feels for Aster, who winds up being an insightful, artistic, intelligent girl. Ellie must battle her feelings for Aster and for Paul as her unlikely friendship is also blossoming, while trying to deter her favorite teacher, who's pushing Ellie to go to a prestigious college out of state and not just a local community college where she plans to. Will Ellie stay in Squamish with her father and the sausage fest that's going on across the street? And by sausage fest, I mean the Munsky Sausage Store, which is Paul's family shop, which incidentally is right across the street from Ellie's place. Or will she proclaim her love to Aster and tell her, I'm the only one who walk across the fire for you.
Yeah.
That's a Melissa Etheridge song. Or will she blow out of Squamish to seek her own fortune and find her own voice? Find out with us as we explore the half of it, or the other half of it, or both halves, which would be the whole damn thing.
Nice. That was beautifully done. Mwah.
thank you. Did you like my singing renditions too?
Oh, your Melissa Etheridge is spot on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was even doing the air guitar while I sang it, so thank you. I'm glad you appreciated it.
Well, you know, how can you not do the air guitar while you sing it? It's sort of like you have to.
Yeah. It's almost like an unconscious thing that just your hands start doing when Melissa comes on.
Yep. Because she's that rockin'.
She is. She's very rockin'. Corinne, would you like to dive into the half of it? To all of the half of it? To the whole thing of the half of it?
Yes. I would love to dive into the half of it. All of the half of it, which is 100% of the half. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Love is simply the name for the desire and pursuit of the whole. Plato, the Symposium. Oh. There are thoughtful quotes throughout this movie.
There are.
Ellie narrates, the ancient Greeks believed that we originally had four arms, four legs, and one head with two faces. We were so happy this way, complete. But the gods didn't like this. If we were whole and satisfied, we wouldn't turn to them. So they split us in half, leaving us to wander the world looking for our missing half. The half of it? Uh-huh. Oh. Mm. Miserable and longing for the other half of our soul. If they found their half, there would be amazing unity. But the ancient Greeks never went to high school. They didn't realize we didn't need to be split apart to royally mess things up ourselves. If you ask me, people spend too much time looking for perfect love. It's nearly impossible to find and make last. More evidence to Camus' theory that life is irrational and meaningless.
I loved the intro because the animation mm-hmm. and the little like thing they had to play out her narrative was yeah. so cool. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so into this. Because it was like the person was drawn on a line sheet of paper and then they were crumbled up and stuck aside. And then they were ripped in half when they lost their other half. It was so well done. I was like, chef's kiss. Mwah. Wow.
Yes. That whole thing was really well done. And, you know, there's a couple of things that I was like, this is just so thoughtful. This whole comparison to the half of it and our four person selves being split in half. Super like interesting, thought provoking, thoughtful. Also, sausage tacos. Very thoughtful as well. Like, huh? That one makes me think too. So,
spoiler for later. Yes. Sasha's Tacos is coming up.
Yes. Another reason why Tam might have liked this movie.
Mm. I was here for it. I'm like, where can I get one of those? Is that a Taco Bell?
I was thinking about asking the director and writer of this movie, Alice Wu, about how she got inspired to come up with Sasha's Tacos.
Yes. I wonder if there's like, yeah, a little hole in the wall that she came across and was like, oh my God, these are the best things ever.
Asking her the deep questions. Yeah.
Speaking of which, I know last episode when we announced that we were doing this movie and I was like, I've never seen it. I'm very excited. A few days before we actually did the outline, I was like, I have seen this movie, but it did not resonate with me until I watched it this time. And now I have very strong feelings about it.
I think that you went through a little evolution when I told you what the plot was. You're like, oh, wait, I think I have seen that movie.
Her dad has train tracks, right? And you're like, kind of. I mean, I know what I meant.
Speaking of train tracks, we hear a train horn. Choo-choo. And then we get to see a glimpse of Ellie's life as she leaves the English paper behind that she was writing to run outside and signal a train. Afterwards, she preps a frozen pot pie for her dad, who is much like the dad in Pretty in Pink, sitting on the couch, having his daughter handle things while life passes by. Yay,
despondent dads. Woo.
Like lovable yet despondent fathers.
Okay, just go ahead and lean all your heavy burden on your child.
Yeah, yeah.
On your child.
No worries. Your teenager should totally be paying the bills, right? Question mark.
And doing your job.
Yeah.
And making your dinner and having to go to school and make her own way. Absolutely. No big deal.
No big deal. Yeah. So he's much like the dad in Pretty in Pink, sitting on the couch, having his daughter handle things while life passes by. Ellie finishes another paper for another student, and from the looks of her checklist, she has quite a healthy clientele, and rides her bike to school as dumbass students drive by her yelling out the window, "Chugga chugga choo choo!" Fuckers. In music class, she surreptitiously hands out completed English papers to students after receiving their $20 Venmos, and she tries to ignore the teacher who is telling everyone that if they're seniors, they must participate in the talent show. But I think the true highlight of music class for Ellie is Aster Flores, who she steals glances at while Aster sits next to her football jock boyfriend Trick, and Aster beautifully sings, "You fill up my senses like a night in the forest." Aster sings this with the rest of the choir, but her voice stands out. And bespectacled Ellie, whose hair is pulled back in a low ponytail and who lives in the small town of Squamish, holds 0% hope of being with that girl.
I'm so glad you looked up where Squamish was, because I was wondering, I was like, where is Squamish? It sounds like it would be in Washington or the Pacific Northwest, mm-hmm. but...
So Squamish is made up, mm-hmm. but it is in Washington in the Pacific Northwest.
Got it.
Yeah.
So in the previous section that you did, they called Ellie Chugga Chugga Choo Choo because her last name is Chew. Clever.
Yeah.
Did you have any kids that made fun or did like stupid renditions of your name in any way?
Absolutely not. They were just like cruel to me, generally speaking, but I was thin, so they never picked on me for my weight. They didn't ever picked on me for my name. They picked on me for being like a boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to add that people used to call me, because my name was Tamara, and it looks like it's spelled Tamara. And so when people got a hold of that and saw it, they'd be like, "Tamara, Tamara, I love you, Tamara, you're only a day away. Or they'd say, "Casio, like the watch." And I'm like, "It's Casio. Casio, like the watch." There's no A there. It's Casio. Like the watch. Whatever. Sure. Fine. Okay. Let's just stick with that.
You're like, except take the A, put a little cross through it.
I'm over it. I only try to explain it for 5 minutes and then I'm done. I'm like, whatever. Call me what you want. I don't care. I will not be responding to it. But that's fine.
People definitely mispronounced my name, but it wasn't in an intentional way. It was just because they were confused about life.
Mm-hmm. Me, yes, I got it. Oh, yeah. Like, they just think they're so clever. And I'm like, really? The Tomorrow song? Haven't heard that 73 times before. Thank you.
I never even thought about it. Now I feel like maybe I have a song in my heart to greet you with.
No.
I have a feeling there's some emotions there. Never mind. I take it all back.
I got all the Tomorrows I can handle, Corinne. Please don't. Later in English, her teacher, Miss Gelsish, how do you say this lady's name? Gesselschap?
That's why I called her Mrs. G throughout this, because we never actually hear her name pronounced, but I would say Gesselschap. Yeah.
Mrs. G, G for Gesselschap, assigns the class 500 words on Sartre's use of the thwarted desire due Monday. The bell rings and the class piles out, except for Ellie, who approaches her desk. Her teacher eyes her. 6 different takes on Plato. I'm impressed. Ellie says smoothly, "Ugh, just the one." Her teacher scoffs. "That's what I tell the bartender." Ellie asks, "How come you've never turned me in?" And her teacher wisely replies, "Do you think I want to read the papers that they'd actually write?" She pushes an application to Grinnell College, a super exclusive private college in Iowa that has more Fulbright scholars than any other school and a total student population of about 1,700, towards Ellie. But Ellie's not biting. "You know, I have a full ride to EDUB, and that way I can stay at home. The unsaid portion, which is AKA, so I can take care of my dad."
Uh-huh.
Her teacher takes a sip of coffee, rolling her eyes. More like hell Quamish. Ha! "I spent 4 of the best years of my life at Grinnell." And Ellie points out, "And here you are back in hell Quamish."
Ooh.
Mrs. G eyes her warily. "Yeah, well, maybe you should stay away from the liberal arts." Ellie's done with the conversation with her favorite teacher, and deadpan says, "Try not to get fired over the weekend." Mrs. G scoffs. Everyone in town is afraid of God, but do you know who God fears? The teachers' union.
And Edge of 17 and this movie? Awesome.
Teachers.
Awesome teachers. Uh-huh. Yeah.
What goes great with growing pains? Awesome teachers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hand in hand. On Ellie's ride back home, she slowly pedals up a hill as a truck full of jocks drives by, yelling the familiar refrain, chug-a-chug-a-choo-choo. She hears footsteps pounding behind her and a voice yelling, wait, wait. But she continues pedaling up the hill, ignoring it. The footfalls and calls get more frantic, but Ellie has precious little time to spare. A hand catches onto the milk crate basket on her bike, causing Ellie and the bike to tip over. It's her classmate, Paul Munsky. She gets up, brushing herself off and exclaiming, what the hell? While he apologizes profusely. Sorry, so, so sorry. She rolls her eyes, looking at him beleaguered. $10 for 3 pages, $20 for 3 to 10 pages. He shakes his head. I don't want to cheat. I need your help. He thrusts an envelope into her hands and she asks, who writes letters these days? He says timidly, I thought it would be romantic. Ellie opens it, skims the content, and promptly shoves a letter back in the envelope. Nope, I'm not going to write a love letter to Astor Flores, anyone. Those are personal. It should just be authentic. Paul looks at her hopefully. That would be awesome. I just need a few words. But Ellie shakes her head. No, I can't be you and be authentic. Get a thesaurus. Use spell check. Good luck, Romeo. She gets back on her bike and starts pedaling off. And because he has money from working at his family sausage business, he yells after her, I can pay more for authentic.
I am so excited for getting to his letter. It's amazing.
I have written a love letter in my time, and love letters from teenagers are never good. I mean, unless you're Ellie, because they're just flowery. Mine were flowery and overdone and just like worked to death about my feelings and how I felt. And it's like, you're not even like addressing the other person that you're like writing the letter to. I was really bad at that sort of thing.
Oh, when I was in community college, there was this guy that I dated for a few months who was a computer programmer, and he had his own house and blah blah blah. One of my if I could turn back time moments was I met up with him one weekend and I handed him a note that I wrote in class.
Okay.
Well, you know, notes from class are like, hey, I'm just sitting here while the teacher teaches, thinking about blah, blah, blah. Like, it was a note, a note from class. Like,
do you like me? Check yes or no.
No. Note. No, but just like, I'm just sitting here with the teacher teaches, thinking about you. Like, what's up? How's it going? You know, I mean, it's not something that I would ever write now. And,
oh.
You know, and it showed my age is what I'm saying.
I'm sure many a person in this day and age have done the same thing via text. Oh. When you don't have anything occupying your time or space and you're bored, sometimes you just write shit down and send it to the person you're thinking about. You just did it in paper form. Absolutely nothing wrong with that.
I do it to you all the time.
Have you ever thought of taco sausage?
Yeah.
These are the things I think of at work.
No, I just sent you something just the other day. It was, oh yeah, about Whitney Houston's song being about being in an affair with a man, a married man.
Yes, that was, if I remember it correctly, you wrote Saving All My Love for You from Whitney Houston is actually about her being in an affair. Relationship with the married man. I sincerely hope that's not your and Larry's wedding song if you choose one.
Well, you know, I just heads up.
Okay. I mean, I would thoroughly probably investigate and research the songs if I was entertaining the notion of having one for my wedding, just because how many people use the song Every Breath You Take by the Police, which is about a stalker.
I do think this is a better choice than about an affair with a married man. Not an affair. She's not having the affair. He's having the affair. But having a relationship with a married man is, you know, gonna take you for a ride on my big jet plane.
On my big dick plane.
Yeah.
We're busting out the big romantic guns this episode, uh-huh. You'll know. Notice.
Yeah. Speaking of romantic guns. Sunday evening while she sits. No, this is not romantic at all. Sunday evening while Ellie sits in the living room typing someone else's paper and her dad watches Casablanca, which not really romantic, actually. The lights flicker. She asks her dad in Mandarin, did you call the power company? And I have to thank this movie because it reminded me that I needed to pay my PG&E bill.
And thanks half of it.
Thanks half of it. He responds, no, they don't understand my accent. She looks over at him, his eyes glued to the TV. Did you even try? He shushes her and says in pretty good and very understandable English, best part, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. They look at each other and she responds, I'll call them tomorrow. And he smiles gratefully back at her. Monday morning, before class starts, Ellie is trying to work her way through the variety of phone prompts of the electric company as she negotiates her way through the halls. She sees Paul in the distance and rushes away in another direction before he sees her. A guy thwacks into her, causing her to drop all her books and her phone. Shit, shit, shit. You don't want to have to start over with that menu. No, 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 no. Fortunately, her phone does not hang up, but she stops to gather her stuff. Random guy who thwacked into her doesn't stop, but who does stop is... Aster Flores.
You were going to call her Angel.
I was totally going to call her Angel. Aster crouches across from Ellie, helping her gather her stuff, and Ellie looks at Aster in shock, stating, I'm Ellie Chu. Aster chuckles, I know who you are. You've played piano at my dad's church every Sunday for the past 4 years. You're his favorite heathen. He appreciates a good accompanist. Aster glances down at one of Ellie's books and says, Remains of the Day, loved it. All that barely repressed longing? While Ellie looks at her in disbelief, thinking, what kind of alternate reality is this? Aster Flores is talking to me and she's read Remains of the Day? What the fuck? The bell rings. Aster hands her some books and her phone, gets up and heads to class, and Ellie sticks the phone back up to her ear, stunned. She says softly under her breath, I'm Ellie Chu. And the person on the other end of the line agrees with her and lets her know that her power bill is 3 months overdue, and if she doesn't pay $50 towards the bill that day, their power will be turned off tomorrow. Just then, Paul approaches her in the empty hall, staring at her with puppy dog eyes. And she states, $50, one letter, and after that, you're on your own. He excitedly exclaims, yes! Ooh, now we get to hear the love letter? Do we get to hear the love letter now?
I felt so bad for her because when she was doing the call to the power company, like, it was obviously between, like, 3 or 4 different classes. So she was probably trying to take care of it between, periods, and then didn't happen. So then she had to call again, and it didn't happen. And then she had to call again, and it didn't happen. I have been on those calls, and it fucking sucks.
Yes.
I would not be in as good a mood as Ellie if I had to deal with all that bullshit. Especially when your dad's just sitting at home with his feet up watching old black and white movies. Ellie and Paul have their next meeting in church. Why? Maybe the sanctity of God will make this plan actually work. Ellie reads aloud Paul's first draft of his love letter. It sounds as ham-fisted as we knew it would. It reads, Dear Aster Flores, I think you're really beautiful. Even if you were ugly, I'd want to know you because you are smart and nice, too. It's hard to find all those things in one girl, but even if you were only 2 of those things, I'd be into it. But you're all 3, just to be clear. Paul mouths along to every word, and Ellie glances over at him in horror at what she's reading. Paul clarifies, she's like all 3. Ellie turns back to the letter. About me. Some people think I'm the cutest one in my family. Those people being my grandma, who's dead now. Never mind about my dead grandma. All I'm saying is that I like fries. I like dipping them in my milkshake. Is that weird? No. It's actually really tasty.
It is really tasty.
Would you like to try that with me sometime? I work part-time and I have a truck. Let me know whenever. Thanks, Paul Munsky. Second string tight end football. Ellie looks at him with disdain and he confesses, I'm in love with her. I think about her all the time, like when I'm brushing my teeth or doing my sprints or eating my mom's bratwurst. Ellie sighs. That just means you're stubborn. Have you even spoken with her? Paul shakes his head and looks at her earnestly. No, but I love her. Love makes you do screwy things. Don't you get screwy? Ellie shakes her head, no, and returns to trying to figure out how to zhuzh the letter. Paul's brain hamster's working really hard on that wheel, and he suddenly realizes, oh, you've never been in love. Aww. Ellie glares at him, gets up, and shoves his letter into him and states, you want a letter about love? I'll give you a letter about love. And she starts walking away as he calls after her, one that'll make her fall in love with me, not storm off in a huff like you're doing. And that is the most ODK statement ever uttered in a movie.
In a huff!
Ellie goes home and spends the evening working on the love letter, sitting next to her dad while he watches Wings of Desire. Ellie says in Mandarin, this isn't American. How are you supposed to practice English? Dad shushes her and says, best part. And repeats in French, longing, longing for a wave of love to swell up in me. Suddenly, Ellie's hit with inspiration and starts writing furiously in her notepad. The next day, she hands Paul a sealed envelope and tells him to Venmo her. Her duty is done, and now she has the money for the electricity bill.
Yay! Quote, in love, one always starts by deceiving oneself and ends by deceiving others. This is what the world calls romance. Oscar Wilde.
That's really depressing. Oscar, thanks.
Oh, Oscar, it doesn't need to be that way. It doesn't need to be that way.
No.
After school, while Ellie is riding home, slowly pedaling up a hill, Paul runs after her. Hey, she wrote back. Ellie slams on the brakes and Paul hands her a torn piece of paper from a notebook that says, dear Paul, I like Wim Wenders too. Wouldn't have plagiarized him though. Asked her.
See, Corinne? See? Other people write notes in class like that. So you're fine. You're totally fine.
They're high schoolers. Yes. Writing to high schoolers. It's absolutely fine.
What? How many years out of high school were you when you went to community college?
I was at 4 years by that point. Yes.
Okay, well, let's just bypass that. Let's just say this.
I loved community college, and I stayed there until my mom was like, hey, you need to move on to 4-year college now, Corinne. It's time.
I loved community college too, way better than university. And I was like, I'm staying here forever. I'm not moving. You can't make me. Tamara, you've been here for 7 years and I haven't taken all the classes yet. That's not the point. You're not supposed to take all the classes.
You're like,
I haven't taken archaeology yet. I got a D in it.
Oh, I loved community college. I had the best teachers there. I had the best time there. It was fantastic. My 4-year college experience sucked.
Same. I remember when I was trying to transfer to university because I transferred way after my community college stint. The people at Northridge were not helpful at all. And then I actually had to call my community college and I talked to the career center there. And she's like, okay, what you're going to do is A, and then you're going to do B. And then once you get C, you're going to do D. You're going to talk to the person E at this place. And I'm like, see, this is why I liked you guys better.
But they're in high school. And apparently Aster knows who Wim Wenders is, which is good on you. Good
I don't even know who Wim Wenders is. Aster. Who's Wim Wenders?
He's a director.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Oh, the French guy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's not French. I looked it up because, as you could tell by the script, that I went down several different little rabbit holes with this.
You sure did, and I appreciate you.
I was like, what's this? Click, 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 click. What's this? Click, 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 click. Yeah.
All the stuff that I was going to eventually look up myself, but as I read through the outline that she so lovingly curated, I'm like, oh, Corinne already has what it is right here.
Because I was like, it doesn't sound like they're speaking French in the Wim Wenders movie, Wings of Desire. And then I looked it up and it was like, Wings of Desire is in all of these different languages. I haven't seen the movie, but I'm guessing it's like dubbed in multiple different languages and it doesn't actually maybe it has an original language, but it didn't state an original. And I was just like confused by the whole thing. But yeah. Oh, Wim Wenders, which is spelled with W's. So it's Wim Wenders, but it's pronounced Wim Wenders.
Ah.
Yeah. Just in case you ever run across it. But yeah, Wim Wenders is from not France, from somewhere else. I can't remember. Norway or something. I don't know. So Paul is pissed about the whole Wim Wenders thing because he's like, I paid you to write an original love letter and you cheated off of him. Ellie sighs. I didn't cheat off of him. Paul retorts, nah, I looked up the word plagiarize. Ellie concedes. Okay, I kinda cheated off of him. Paul is pissed. I paid you! Ellie retorts. This is good! She's interested. She awkwardly fist bumps him and excitedly bikes off, leaving a very confused Paul behind. She writes back to Aster. Okay, you got me. I don't know what love is. And then she says, what's love got to do with it? What's love but a secondhand emotion? Or maybe not.
Why don't they have that quote in this movie by Tina Turner?
Seriously. She says that she doesn't know what love is. And then she writes about her life in a way that it could be Paul's as well as hers. And finishing it with, if I knew what love was, I'd quote myself. Paul reads the letter and thinks it's too morose, but Ellie insists that she'll respond to this. He challenges her. You aren't even asking her to hang out. Ellie holds firm. It's too soon. Just give her the letter. And throughout this movie, when Ellie is writing to Aster as Paul, I have the nickname Pelly for that. Get it? Paul Ellie? Ha ha. Okay.
Yeah, that's what you put in the next section. You start with the Pelly.
A bit of time passes and Ellie and Paul are once again at the church. He pulls her into a confessional booth for privacy, handing her the most recent letter. Ellie reads, do you know it takes 11 muscles to yawn? That's the kind of thing I think of to keep myself from, well, yawning. While we hear the letter, we see Aster sitting attentively in church while her dad preaches. She opens her hymnal, and in it is her phone with the book Remains of the Day open on it. It becomes very apparent that a lot of Aster's life is performative, centered around making other people happy. At home, her dad tells her to sit up straight like a lady, and Aster writes to Paul, I'm pretty. I'm guessing that's pretty much why you're writing me. Well, when you're pretty, people want to give you things. What they really want is to make you like them. We see Aster close her locker door, and a pretty blonde girl who is wearing a knit pink circle scarf says, I knit this for you! She thrusts forward an identical pink circle scarf, looking at Aster expectantly until she puts it on. Aster's letter continues, not as in, I like you, but as in, I am like you. Twinsies! The camera pans over to three more girls, all wearing pink circle scarves. Paul wants to text Aster, but Ellie manages to convince him, back away from the phone. You need to write her a bit longer.
And when she gives her the scarf, like Aster and then the girl that gave her the scarf, does she have a name?
I don't think so.
The pretty blonde girl and Aster and then like four or five other blonde girls are all walking down the hallway like Mean Girls style with the same matching outfits on the same matching scarves, like their own little clique.
And Aster is the only brunette.
And she looks fucking miserable. She's like, fuck my life. Like everybody's all smiling like, oh my God, look at how cute we are. And Aster's like, Jesus Christ, get me out of here. But nobody could see her face.
She's like, and why am I wearing this fucking pink circle scarf?
Yeah. The circle scarf that I'm very tempted just to noose up against the Nova's King. I'm going to go to a dark place and I don't need to go there. And the next section, Corinne calls Pelly's correspondence continues. That is Paul and Ellie together mashed up. The letter writers of our time, the love story of the ages, Paul and Ellie and Aster. Pelly writes to Aster, I never thought about the oppression of fitting in. The nice thing about being under the radar is that I don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. Pelly and Aster continue to intimately write each other about feeling different and other deep thoughts. We see Aster accidentally leaving behind one of Pelly's letters in class and then see Ellie in the girls' bathroom washing her hands, listening to a couple of girls gossip in the stall. She looks up from the mirror and sees Aster arrive behind her, waiting for a stall to open up. Aster smiles warmly at Ellie, and Ellie keeps nervously washing her hands until the two girls obliviously talk about how lucky Aster is to be dating Trigg. His family owns half the town, and she's dirt poor.
Oh, fuckers.
One of the girls giggles and adds, I know, and her family doesn't own anything, not even their house.
Oh, my God.
Aster's face falls, and she quickly leaves before the girls see her. Ellie watches her go and gets a snippet that Astor's popular life isn't so perfect. Mrs. G literally pulls Ellie into class and shows her the love letter from quote-unquote Paul that she found. She yoinks her horn. She yoinks and then confronts her. So, this is why half the class is failing and I'm having to read shitty papers? Ellie sighs deeply. I know, it can't go on for much longer and then I'll be back to the paper writing grind. And I'm not entirely sure where Mrs. G's anger lies here. Is it solely for the paper she's forced to read or the Serrano de Bergerac stunt that Ellie's pulling?
I mean, I would miss Ellie's papers, honestly.
Yes, I mean, but if she's a halfway decent teacher, which she seems to be, like she does want her students to learn something, and the way she yoinks Ellie into the class with such force just causes me to question it. I'm like, why are you really mad, Mrs. G? What's really going on?
Yeah, I think she's concerned about Ellie and, you know, her potentially deceiving people or something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Next, we see Astor at work at a restaurant waiting for a couple to stop arguing so she can take their order. She stares at a painting above their heads and muses in her letter to Paul or Pelly. I had an art teacher once tell me the difference between a good painting and a great painting is 5 strokes. But when do you know? How much is 5 too little or 5 too much? This is why I gave up painting. Astor's gazing at the work ? That she did. The painting on the wall is trying to figure out if it was something that she did. Because she screenshots it and sends it to Ellie.
I just thought it was a piece of art in the restaurant that she works at. But, I mean, it could be her art.
Because the reason why I bring it up is that it vaguely resembles a woman's vagina. And I wasn't sure if this was intentional or that's what they were going for until I saw them cut to the next scene, which was a close-up of Paul dumping a sack of sausages into a barrel.
It is sort of George O'Keefe style. You're right. And then we have the sausage fest, literally.
Right.
Oh. Right.
She's like gazing at the painting. It's a vagina. She's talking to Ellie. She's looking at the painting again. It's a vagina. She sends the painting to Ellie. It's a vagina. And then the sausages.
Oh my gosh. I am so dense. How did I not pick up on that? Thank you, Tam. I'm so glad I'm going on this movie journey with you.
If anybody can sniff out sexual innuendo, it's me.
Tamara has a PhD in sexual innuendo, just FYI.
Yes. Astor continues explaining, I didn't want to make a bold stroke and ruin everything, but sometimes I wonder if I'm living my life choosing not to make those bold strokes for myself. Same, Astor, goddammit, same. God, sometimes I say stuff in movies from youngsters and I'm just like, I forgot how that feels.
Aww.
Am I being bold enough in my life? Am I just settling? Ugh. Anyways, Astor is now in the countryside writing in a notepad. Behind her is her boyfriend and his dad standing in front of a Carson gravel truck getting ready to shoot a commercial. Her boyfriend calls to her, hey babe, which jacket? He holds up 2 identical looking ones and she shakes her head. He asks rhetorically, the right one, right? Right. And enthusiastically slings on the jacket in his right hand. Astor finishes writing, it's a pretty good life. Probably the best one can hope for in Squamish. And while Astor is looking at her boyfriend's situation with despair, Ellie looks over at her dad snoozing in his bark lounger, and she too is filled with the balmless balm of, it's a pretty good life. Probably the best one can hope for in Squamish.
Womp, 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 womp. Yeah. Like, Oh, both of them are like a little bit dead inside because they don't feel like they can express themselves.
Be their most authentic selves.
Yeah, you know who has a pretty good life? The best that one can really hope for in Squamish is Trig. Trig has the life.
Oh. I know. I thought, because they were showing him and like he is the fucking prince of Squamish, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was like, he's probably like, I'm never leaving here. Squamish is the best place ever. Uh-huh. Of course it is for you, honey. Nobody else thinks that. But then I'd kind of like thought what it would be like if he moved out of town to someplace else and was like, you don't know me, it's me, Trig. No.
My father is the Gravel King. Like,
The Gravel King, you say? Never heard of him.
And I am the Prince of Gravel.
Great. Yep. That gave me some sort of comfort, like seeing all this tragedy and all these kids not able to be themselves and me just like secretly going, what if Trig like had to go to Seattle and then try to make his way there? And nobody knew him.
He somehow accidentally goes to an art school. He's like, what's going on here?
Trig in art school. That's just crazy talk.
It was the one place he could get a football scholarship.
Oh my God. Because, you know, that's what those art schools are known for. They're football programs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Actually, the Academy of Art University has a thriving sports program. And they recruit people to their school specifically to play certain sports.
You're lying.
I am not lying.
What is their mascot?
I have no idea.
The Fighting Paintbrushes.
Yes! The Fighting Paintbrushes. That would be amazing. Ellie knows that Aster is settling. Ellie, you are settling too. But she challenges Aster, putting coordinates into one of her letters. It leads Aster to a blank wall in an abandoned parking lot. Ellie has written on the wall in blue spray paint. And speaking of animations, I really loved how they layered the animations for this to like create the work of art that they sort of do together. Mm-hmm. Ellie has written on the wall in blue spray paint, any five strokes, and has painted an area pointing down to two cans of spray paint. They talk to each other through the wall, creating different splashes of color here and there when the other is not around, ultimately creating a pretty cool, inspired fairy kind of figure on the wall, until their fun is ruined and painted over by the building owner. Boo! Ellie writes on the big swath of white that has painted over their art, everything beautiful is ruined eventually. And while Pally and Aster are writing notes back and forth to each other about heartfelt risk, in contrast, Aster's friend is texting her, keep me from eating carbs today, okay? Which spurs Aster to start drawing again because she's like, fuck this shit.
Aster, what are you doing? You need to go save your friend from her carbs.
I'll eat your donuts, Aster's friend. It's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm here.
I got you, girl. Yeah. I got you.
Oh, you don't want that fresh pasta? Darn. Let me just clear it away for you. No problem.
I'm going to have to confiscate that bag of chips. I'm saving you.
We're so altruistic and good. Mm-hmm. Yes. Throughout the correspondence, Ellie, I'm shaking her head. No. Throughout the correspondent.
I would be totally like altruistic with the carbs. I'll save you, honey, from the carbs. Where somebody's like, I can't eat celery. So if you see celery in my hand, smack it away. I would literally smack it away. I wouldn't like take one for the team and eat her celery. Huh. So I'm not all giving.
Okay. I'd just be like, where's the peanut butter? I'm ready for.
Damn it. You got me again. Okay. I'm on board again. I'm on board.
Throughout this correspondence, Ellie is explaining to Paul about art and risk and the connection that's developing through the letters. But Paul is frustrated. Yeah, but when are we going to date? Ellie responds, this is dating. And Paul isn't having it. No, you know, burgers, fries, shakes, and more fries. I'm going to text her. Enough of this back and forth. It's time to close the deal. Ellie panics. No, it's not a good time. But Paul has done it. He sends Aster a beautifully written text suggesting a super creative outing with each other.
Not really.
No. He sends her a 3-sentence text. First sentence, burger emoji, fry emoji, shake emoji, fry emoji, tonight, spelled Canadian style, with a question mark. Second sentence, I have blue truck emoji, exclamation point. Third sentence, blushing smiley emoji, exclamation point. He's a regular Shakespeare, that Paul.
Yes. And I was like wondering how much of Ellie's response to his text was because she literally, like, legit didn't think he was ready, or that she just wanted to keep Aster all to herself.
Oh, 100%. She is like, I'm vibing on these conversations. Mm. And you know what is like something that I just think is so beautiful about this movie is Ellie, she starts off all alone kind of in this movie. And through this process, she develops these really interesting and very different relationships with a couple of different people.
Should have said spoiler before that, Corinne. Spoiler! See, now you don't have to listen, gentle listeners, because you know how it ends, pretty much.
She has sex with everyone. I mean, everyone in town. You wouldn't believe it.
They don't call her chugga-chugga-choo-choo for no reason. Esther receives a text while she's once again sitting off to the side while her boyfriend and his friends are in a truck making mud splatters all around them. Fun! The message doesn't have the deep insightfulness that she's used to, and she assesses where she is now and potentially where she could be with the person she's actually having a connection with. She seems conflicted and doesn't immediately reply, while a bevy of beautiful teenage girls all wearing the same high school popular uniform of pink shirts, tight jeans, and denim jackets. If they were in the Barbie movie, it would be perfect. And are all enthusiastically cheering the muddy hijinks. In contrast, Aster's quietly off to the side in muted tones and a khaki jacket, seemingly bored of the scene. While across town, Paul and Ellie are still anxiously staring at Paul's phone, watching the little I'm typing dots go, but not seeing any response. Paul freaks out and Ellie snatches the phone away, typing, "Little sister hacked my phone. Can we take this to a safer platform? Ghost messenger? ? My handle is Smith Corona." Paul is puzzled. "Who's Smith Corona?" And Ellie brushes him off. "Just a guy." What she means is a super cute typewriter, but Paul wouldn't understand that. Aster isn't quite sure what to do until she is pressed further by her boyfriend, who yells out of his muddy truck, "Hey, babe, did you get that? I'm the mudding king." Aster smiles stiffly and nods and quickly opens Ghost Messenger, asking, "So, where are these emoji fries?" Her hand, Diego Rivera, of course. You said Diego Rivera. Why did she pick Frida Kahlo?
I don't know, but her handle is Diego Rivera.
I know, but you're like, of course it's Diego Rivera. And I was like, no, not of course. It should be Frida Kahlo. Why would she want to be Diego Rivera?
Another question for us to ask Alice Wu. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes. Add it to the list. Taco sausage, Frida Kahlo.
Seriously. I'm adding it to the list. I'm writing her. I'm going to write her. We're Facebook friends, so.
Before you send it, would you like me to double check in case you want to make any revisions a la Pelly style?
Look, just because I'm going to write her and be like, "I think you're pretty and smart and kind and I like you, even if you're only two of those three things, but you're three of those three things." That's not going to be embarrassing for me, is it?
No, not at all. You go ahead and write that. Just keep my name off of the from Corinne and only Corinne at ODK.
Oh my gosh. At first I thought it was a combination of their two names. Like, I wasn't really paying attention and I thought it was like Rivera Kahlo or something like that. And I was like, okay, it's like both of them. But then when I saw it was just Diego Rivera, I was like, but why? Same as you. But yeah. Why?
Yeah. Why? Poor Kay.
I see. This it gives you indigestion that she chose Diego Rivera, yeah. Who's like a sexist, like philandering, womanizing yeah. guy, versus Frida Kahlo, who's like super interesting. I mean, he's interesting too, but also.
Right.
Yeah.
A chauvinist.
Yes. Yeah. I'll choose Frida, thank you. Yes.
Whew. When Ellie receives the message, both she and Paul whoop, super excited, but then Ellie realizes, problem. Aster is expecting a very different person than the very nice but also very basic bitch, who is Paul.
Yes.
But they barrel through anyways. Paul pulls up to Sparky's diner as Ellie tries briefing him through an earpiece on things he should be mindful of. Paul hears blah, 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 remains of the day, something blah, 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 Nazis. And assures Ellie, "I got this, don't worry, it's a date, not a book report." Cut to Aster pushing a copy of Remains of the Day over to Paul, excitedly stating, "I got two of them signed at Powell's book last year. You probably already read it, but I thought you might like a signed copy." Paul looks like a deer caught in headlights. "Yeah, thanks, I've totally read it. I love Nazis. I mean, the one in the books, those Nazis, am I right?" Ellie's listening to the conversation through her cell phone, dying inside, and Aster is trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. The date is basically a disaster.
Oh my gosh. Can you even imagine, like, going out with a guy and him being like, this person you've had these really interesting, thought-provoking conversations with him, and he's like, yeah, those Nazis were great. And you'd be like, yeah. Weed, weed, weed.
Nothing says great pillow talk like Nazis, am I right? I'm sorry, what?
No, just back away from the Nazis. Back away from the Nazis.
No, not normal Nazis. Remains of the day Nazis.
Oh, those Nazis. They are a laugh riot. No, they're not. Nazis equals that. Say,
I've never read Remains of the Day, but I'm going to venture a guess that they're not.
Yeah, no. Neither have I. And also, no. The next day, as Ellie rides her bike to school and Paul jogs after her, she tries explaining to him that he and Aster are a big nothing burger. They have nothing in common. But Paul is not ready to give up. She shakes her head and starts pedaling faster away from him when the teenage truck drives by that yells at her, chugga chugga choo choo. But this time it's different because Paul, who is a beautiful, lovely puppy dog of a human being who, like, at first you see him and you're like, what is there to him? And then you see him in this moment and you're like, this guy, he's a guy you want on your side, you know?
I'm nodding emphatically. Yeah. You can't see it 'cause this is a podcast.
So Paul runs after the truck, throwing a rock at it, yelling, hey, that's not cool. Ellie looks at this pure-hearted puppy boy with new eyes, heart eyes, but not the romantic kind. Let's be very clear about that. And she decides to try to help Paul because he won her heart in that moment. And, like, I kind of don't blame her. Like,
yeah. He won a lot of hearts with that little action there.
Yeah. So when Pelly gets a text from Aster saying, that was weird, Ellie sets up another date with Aster, but 3 weeks out. She takes these 3 weeks to train Paul like an athlete that he is. She has him jogging while she talks to him about existentialism. And no exit.
So you gotta get some romantic music to accompany his workouts.
Okay.
You fill up my senses.
In no exit, three people are trapped in hell. The door opens, but nobody leaves. Like a lion in the forest. Paul doesn't get it. Why don't they just get out of there? Who wants to be in hell? My nana hated Minnesota, and she left. Like a something in something. It's unclear how much Ellie's tutoring is helping Paul to understand and be a better counterpart to Aster. However, it is helping him on the football field. He's gotten really fast from chasing after Ellie on her bike. Like a something in the rain. While she shares about the merits of the movie, The Philadelphia Story, he shares his latest invention, the taco sausage. And in this moment, if he hadn't won over Tamara's heart by throwing a rock at the kids in the truck who were taunting Ellie, he very well may have won her over in this moment. I don't know. Taco sausage. Thoughts?
How can you not love a man who makes gourmet sausages? Come on now. Come on.
Two great foods, one great taste. That's what he says.
Two great foods, one great taste. It's phallic, you know? It's got, like, the whole... It could be an extension of him, a delicious, delicious extension of him.
Oh. Is that a sausage in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? Yeah.
That's a spicy sausage.
It is if Paul's making it, because he's into the spices. Sadly, Ellie doesn't try this delicacy, but I think she should.
I second that.
They spy on Aster as she walks through the drugstore, and also as she laughs her way through a horror movie. One evening, while Pelly are hanging out in Paul's truck, looking through a pair of binoculars at Aster, Nothing creepy going on here. Every step you take. Speaking of, every move you make.
Oh, my goodness.
They're watching.
That's right. It's been a while since we injected copious amounts of songs into our podcast. Today, we're making up for it. Thank you, Corinne.
You're welcome. They're watching her eat dinner with her family, and Paul asks Ellie why she/her family is in Squamish, because you're so smart, you don't really seem to fit there. Ellie tries to flee the truck, proclaiming, "Forget about it. You're not taking this seriously." And Paul digs deep. Wait. The thing about no exit is, it's like how I really want to run my own shop with my own recipes. And FYI, taco sausage is really effing good. But my family wants to keep things traditional, like they've been doing for 45 years. And it doesn't matter if it's no longer working for them or it's out of style. They're Nana's recipes, so they must be preserved. And if I break away, I'll break her heart. So it's either her heart or mine. So I stay. And I'm like, oh.
Oh, my God. Stop it. Oh, my God. Stop it.
Paul. Oh, Paul. You're starting to get some layers. Ellie, who is sitting poised to leave with the truck door open, gets back in the truck and closes the door. She lets Paul know that being a train station manager in Squamish was where her dad could get a job. He's got a doctorate in engineering, but his English isn't good. This job was supposed to be a jumping off point to bigger and better engineering jobs, but her dad's ability to speak English proved to be too big of an obstacle, so they ended up stuck in Squamish. Paul is sympathetic and invites Ellie over to his house for dinner. She's initially reluctant, but then accepts. However, when they get to Paul's house, Paul's loud and very large family is all gathered around the table yelling at each other. It's chaos. Paul and Ellie look at each other, and Paul suggests, maybe your place would be better. Cut to Ellie's dad sitting in his chair looking over at Ellie in her chair with a, what's going on here, look? And Ellie staring back at him with an, it is what it is, look. While Paul sits happily in the floor in between the both of them, munching on a pot pie and watching the Charlie Chaplin movie that's on the TV.
That boy is probably really appreciating the peace and quiet.
I was surprised he wasn't just like, oh, it's fine, let's dive in. Instead, he's like, oh, this is a shit show, let's go.
The next day, Ellie has Paul practice conversation while lightly volleying a table tennis ball back and forth between them. It's the way that Ellie discovers that Paul feels largely ignored by his family. They haven't tried his biggest passion project, his taco sausage, and that he is interested in all kinds of spices, including five spice, in the name of more awesome sausage seasoning. Paul learns that Ellie was born in China. She came over to the States with her family when she was five. Her mom is dead, but when she was alive, she was funny and kind and fun. And although they are very different, the one major thing they have in common is Paul and Ellie are really only familiar with Squamish as a place to live.
Aww.
Meanwhile, Ellie's private texting with Aster continues, but Aster thinks it's Paul, and this is starting to bother Ellie some. Aster, the person she feels understands her more than anyone else, thinks she is A, someone else, and B, a guy. At one point, Ellie and Paul are hanging out at the train station near the ping pong table, and she asks him why he likes Aster. He dreamily replies, "She's pretty, smart, super kind, and she smells like fresh ground flour. Why?" Ellie casually says, "Just wondering." And he responds, "What else could I like about her?" Ellie stares off dreamily. "I don't know. How her eyes can look right into yours? How she twirls her hair while she's reading? How her laugh bursts out when she can't help herself and she stops being so perfect? How you could live in an ocean of her thoughts and feel like she knows? Aww. Really knows?" Ellie trails off and quickly looks over at Paul, who smiles thinking about these things, and then his face falls. "Oh, I'm such an idiot! Those are the kind of things people who are in love really say." And Ellie quickly backpedals. Oh no, I would never. Uh-huh. He interrupts her. "And you don't even care, but you can come up with those things and I can't. God." Ellie looks simultaneously relieved because she thought he was going to call her out on having a crush on Aster, and also looks concerned about Paul. She says, "You try harder than anyone I've ever met. with the possible exception of my dad, with my mom, to show a girl that you really love them. And she refers back to a previous conversation that they had where he talked about love being the effort you put into someone. She continues, if love isn't the effort you put in, then what is?
Aww.
He looks back at her with renewed hope in his eyes. Renewed hope in his big, stupid puppy dog eyes.
I know.
By the way, gentle listeners, good news. Ellie finally relents and lets Paul serve up taco sausage to her and her dad, and they are a hit. He earnestly serves them at the Chew House, looking back and forth between Ellie and Pop until they take their initial bites. After the maiden munch, both the Chews start eating them in earnest. On top of that, she finds out that Paul drinks Yakult, which the coach has delivered to the football players' special vending machines because it keeps them regular. Ellie marvels at this, given how the nearest Asian grocery store that sells Yakult is 3 hours away by bike.
And Yakult is a drinkable probiotic yogurt.
Yes. I've never had it. Have you, Corinne?
No. I've seen it in real life, but I haven't imbibed it.
Yeah. Neither have I. Gentle listeners, if you have strong feelings about Yakult, please let us know at odk@gmail.com. OneDryKiss@gmail.com.
We would love to hear your thoughts on Yakult and perhaps how regular it makes you, because that's super important to us.
Yes.
I specifically made sure to give you the scene where they ate the taco sausage together.
It was so cute because he was like sitting there like, I just love that stupid earnest look on his face when he was looking at Mr. Chew and then Ellie and then Mr. Chew and then Ellie with like the biggest grin on his face, and they just, as soon as they bit into it, and he was like, yeah, 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 and they loved it, and he's like, see, I told you.
Yeah, the dad takes one bite and he's like thinking about it, and then he like shoves another bite into his mouth. It's the evening of the date, and before Paul heads over to Sparky's diner, he stands outside of his place, which is across the street from Ellie's place, and watches her practice guitar and write a song. She doesn't know this, and when she bikes over to Sparky's diner and pops into Paul's truck to pep talk him before his date, she apologizes profusely for being late because of her practicing for the talent show, and quickly tries to jam more information into him. He assures her he's got this. Even though he thinks he's going to crash and burn, she assures him, you're not going to crash and burn, even though she thinks he totally will.
We all do.
Yeah, yeah. Same, same. Which is why I say, the date? Starts off terrible once again. Paul brings up the immigration bill, but it's only a buzzword to him. He can't say anything about it. And Aster brings up that they're friends. Yay. She does have a boyfriend, after all. Ugh. Ellie stares at their date from her vantage point in the truck. She can see them sitting in front of one of the front windows of the diner. And she sees that things are going shitty. So she texts Aster. Ding! I get nervous when you're close. Aster reads the text, looks up at Paul and says, you texted me. He's confused. I did? He quickly snatches his phone from the tabletop. I did! He glares at Ellie through the window, his look saying, what the fuck? And she quickly texts him saying, look at your phone! He texts her back saying, what are you saying? Meanwhile, Aster texts Pelly back, and Pelly and Aster go back and forth with each other until Paul springs up and says, I don't want to be your friend. You're pretty smart. And your laughter is like an ocean of thoughts. Five voices. I mean, I'm not good with words. Aster smiles softly back at him, and Paul has somehow triumphed in this moment. Ellie grabs her bike from the back of his truck and heads home.
I was so worried about Ellie in this moment, because when Aster and Paul went on their first date, she was like, thanks for coming so far out, because they had to go away from Squamish, I guess, away from all the prying eyes that know that she's in a relationship with Trig.
Right.
And so when I saw Ellie get out of the truck, I'm like, how far do you have to go to get home, Ellie?
Oh.
The next day, Paul and Ellie catch up at a secondhand clothing store while Ellie tries throwing clothes on top of her already existing outfit so that she can get something quote-unquote appropriate for when she plays the piano at a talent show. She has a random blouse on over her hoodie and a miniskirt over her pants as Paul recounts the rest of his evening with Aster. TLDR, they didn't really talk much, but they hung out, ate food, held hands, and then they kissed. Ellie's puzzled by the kiss. How did you know she wanted to be kissed? And Paul tries to explain and imitate the kiss tractor beam. Banner fucking writing, Corinne. No notes. That was from Tamara. But Paul's not doing a good job of it. Eventually, he says, they look at you in a way that says they want to be kissed. And if you don't do it, you're going to be a putz. Ellie shrugs and chalks it up to something she's just not going to understand. And Paul also tells her that he was contacted by a food reviewer from a neighboring city. He's excited, deducing that the food reviewer learned about Paul's sausage tacos from another food reviewer that he's been writing, trying to come try his sausage tacos. Ellie's happy for him, and after congratulating him, she's about ready to leave and buy the additional clothes that she slapped on over her already on outfit. When Paul does her real solid, I know you need something for the recital, but the girly stuff doesn't really look right on you. Here, go back in the dressing room and I'll toss some things in for you. Ellie objects, but you're a dude. And he chuckles, yeah, but I've got a sister. And she reluctantly heads back to the dressing room. Sadly, there's no fashion montage, but I'm super curious as to what Ellie winds up getting from the store. Aren't we all?
Yes. I thought that, like, it was so sweet of him, though, because he was like, that's not you. That's somebody else. Let's find you something that is you.
I know. And so, like, he's surprisingly insightful.
Yeah.
Like, even though he can't articulate and express himself really well, like, he's got a big, soft, squishy heart.
He's got a big, soft, squishy heart. And he also, in some ways, sees Ellie in a very genuine way. And in a way that most people don't see her.
Which is so funny because when you're like, why do you like Aster? She smells good and she's nice and she's pretty. Triple whammy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. All right.
But I bet you he couldn't even say why he likes Ellie. She's smart.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah, that's really interesting. I'd be curious to see what Paul Munsky would say about Ellie if asked.
Yeah. It's the night of the talent show, and Ellie watches nervously from behind the curtain. The audience looks bored until Trig, Aster's obnoxious jock boyfriend, comes out, riles up the crowd, and lip syncs. Is he lip syncing or is he doing original music?
I think he's doing original music.
Okay. Sings some music with an actual, he has an actual band backing him. Of other students. Once Trig starts performing, a person comes up to Ellie, letting her know that she has 3 minutes before going on. So if you need to go to the bathroom, now's the time. Ellie heads off, and while she's gone, the gross chugga chugga choo choo boys sabotage the upright piano that Ellie is going to play, cutting some of the strings. Assholes. Trig finishes up and the audience goes from overjoyed and dancing around with glow sticks to, like, literally they had glow sticks.
Where did the glow sticks come from? Did Trig supply the glow sticks? That's what I'm thinking.
I am sure he did. Yeah.
Hmm.
We probably missed the part where he's like, are you ready, party people? And then there are suddenly, like, these people like, glow stick for you. You get a glow stick. You get a glow stick. You get a glow stick.
How you feeling, Squamish?
So the audience goes from overjoyed and dancing with glow sticks to back to sleepy and bored. Now when they see Ellie push the upright piano onto the stage.
Okay, wait a second. Where the fuck is the stagehand? I know it's a high school production of a talent show, but come on. Nobody could help Ellie haul the fucking piano onto stage.
They're too busy, like, getting rid of Trig's band equipment to...
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Let the wee girl push a piano across stage by herself. As long as the guitars get gone, that's more important.
Yes. I'm glad that we have our priorities in order here. Yeah.
We do not. I am saying that sarcastically.
So the wee girl with arms of steel positions the piano so her back is to the audience so she doesn't have to see them when she plays. She's looking good. This is her outfit. Gentle listeners, her outfit. Announcement. We're seeing the outfit that Paul picked out for her. She is looking nice in dark skinny jeans with a white button-down collared shirt. And she does. She looks lovely and like herself. She plays the first few chords of a classical piece, and it sounds great. But when she moves her hand to a different register, the piano goes from sounding rich and somber to sharp and tinny like an out-of-tune toy piano. She sits there mortified, and we'll find out if she flops or succeeds after the break. And we're back.
Taco sausage, taco sausage, taco sausage.
Are you like soothing yourself with thoughts of taco sausage while you think about Ellie's heart breaking during her foiled performance?
Yes. Placating my dress with thoughts of taco sausage.
Man, I wish I thought about taco sausage during The Edge of 17. Maybe I would have like been a little more like chill throughout the movie.
Doubtful.
Ellie doesn't know what the fuck to do. She is like, I am crashing and burning. This sucks. The chugga chugga choo choo boys are snickering in the audience because they're assholes. And she doesn't see Paul, who is rushed over from his sausage job to come and see her perform. I don't know why he's not performing, but regardless, doesn't matter. He's come to see her perform. He sees her dilemma and borrows an acoustic guitar from another performer sitting in the front row. Paul slides it across the stage towards her and whispers loudly, "Play your song!" She reluctantly turns around on the piano bench and grabs the guitar and starts playing some chords. She then starts singing, "Here we are, took so long, came so far, slept half the way on your shoulder, safe and sound as the night tore and spun around, we had to get lost to be found." She finishes her song and the audience starts clapping. They look on enchanted, and then the clapping gets louder and louder. People stand and give her a standing ovation, because that's what happens when you stand and clap. It is a standing ovation. Corinne, thank you. Better and writing. And just in case you were wondering what a standing ovation was, Tamara, it's when people stand and they clap for you.
At the same time?
At the same time. Yes.
Amazing.
I know. Sure, you needed that explained to you. And the audience cheers, and the asshole chugga chugga choo choo boys have been fucking foiled. Suck it, assholes. They look sad and disappointed.
Shucks.
I know. Oh! Trig watches from the wings, standing next to Paul, and looks at Ellie appreciatively, asking, "When did Ellie Choo get kinda hot?"
Back the fuck up, Trig. Back the fuck up.
Seriously. If there's someone she's going to go for that is not a woman, it's not going to be you, Trig. I will tell you that.
No. Mm-mm. No, no. That evening, as Ellie sits by herself in a small train booth outside of her house, Paul rolls up in a car filled with lots of other students and tells Ellie to come out to the after talent show party with them. She surprisingly does. And in a beautiful scene straight out of Say Anything, when Diane Court goes to her first high school party after graduation, and another girl excitedly approaches her, saying how much she admires her, and asks her to sign her yearbook, Ellie Choo enters the party, and a guy announces to the room, "Hey, it's the Chinese girl!" And the room breaks into a kind of cheers to Ellie Choo. Then a girl approaches Ellie and says, "Hey, I'm in math with you, and I've always wanted to tell you, I've admired your fingernails." Ellie says, "Yeah, the bike grease? I can't get it out." And the girl responds, "It's hella cool. Come on, let's play Drinkers of Catan. It's like Settlers of Catan, but when you cross a fairway, you take 3 shots and you just keep going." She pulls Ellie into another room. Paul is at the party, but he's mainly just grabbing red Solo cups and keeping an eye on things. He finds Ellie, who's been playing the recipe for alcohol poisoning drinking game, that is, Drinkers of Catan, and she over-articulates to him, "I just want you to know that I've been monitoring my alcohol intake. I know I've been drinking because regular punch doesn't make me pee this much, so I'm good." Paul eyes her. "So, how many drinks have you had?" She blinks at him and he responds, "That's what I thought. Time to go home." And she willingly heads out the door with him, but not before vomiting on the stairs.
Aww.
I believe he actually takes her to his place and plops her onto his twin bed. She is out like a light. He accidentally knocks over her messenger bag and out spills several stamped envelopes addressed to food critics throughout the state of Washington with Paul's return address on the envelopes. She's been trying to get his taco sausage dream to come true.
Heartsies, heartsies, heartsies. Because Paul, bless his heart, is like, there's this one critic that I'm writing to in like the small neighboring town that I just keep on writing to.
Yeah, he's one day he's going to open my letter and be moved to try my taco sausage. And if he doesn't, I'm going to keep trying because I got my sights set on him.
Yeah.
And with nobody else.
With the one guy. Yeah.
That guy. Ted from the next town over. I'm just writing to Ted. Ted and only Ted. He sits there for a long time after she's fallen asleep, and we don't quite know what his intentions are. Does he not want her to choke on her own vomit? Confront her about the sausage letters? Or perhaps he's figured out about her feelings for Aster. But when she wakes up, he's gone. Oh, wait, that's your part. Scratch that. We don't know what happens. Still sitting there while she sleeps.
I liked all your postulating. It's staying. And he does stay up and watch her sleep. When Ellie wakes up, he's gone. As Tamara said, thank you for covering that. Just in case I missed it, I appreciate you covering the bases.
She does eventually wake up. Yes, yes, when she does.
This is good. Now, it would be a much sadder movie if she didn't. Ellie wakes up and Paul's gone, but he's left her a couple of aspirin and a glass of water because he's a fucking mensch. Ugh, love this guy. Wouldn't be able to date him, but love him. However, when she looks at her phone, she does a spit take because Aster has messaged Pelly saying that she's coming over because she got back early from Sacramento. Ellie springs from the bed, throwing on her jacket and trying to make things look less like she slept over. Just as Paul's mom brings Aster downstairs and she says, "Oh, it's Paul's Chinese friend," because that's what happens when you're the one Chinese family, Chinese person in town. You just get dubbed the Chinese person. Great. Thanks.
No reason to learn her name.
No, no. And I say, yeah, don't mind her. She doesn't have a name or anything. Aster is surprised to see Ellie in Paul's basement bedroom. But Ellie insists that they're just friends and Paul's 100% into Aster. She just came over to lend him some books. Aster is taking it all in. And she's holding a piece of paper. Ellie goes to leave for the station, but pauses when she sees the piece of paper Aster is holding is a painting. Aster explains, "Oh, it's just a silly thing I made on my trip." Ellie gently takes the piece of art from her hand and looks at it. It's a watercolor painting of a white daisy against a black background, and it's really sweet looking. Ellie comments, "I like the stroke off to the side. It's lonely but hopeful." Aster assesses Ellie and responds with a, "Yeah," but you can tell she's thinking about so much more. Ellie hands the art piece back to Aster and says briskly, "He'll love it," and passes by Aster to head back to the station. But Aster stops her. "Hey, can I go to the station with you?" Ellie is surprised, but Aster continues, "I've already lied to my dad and I have the entire day free." So Ellie agrees.
I wonder if her dad was at all worried about Ellie that evening when she didn't come home.
He was probably asleep and didn't even notice.
But in my high school drinking days, I know that when you go pass out like pukey drunk and go to sleep, you usually don't wake up until like noon or one the next day. So I am pretty sure that her dad wakes up before then. And just right now, just had the passing thought of, what did her dad think, or where did he think she was?
He was probably
does she
like,
often leave home overnight?
Yeah, he was probably like, "Oh, she must have left before I woke up."
After Ellie signals a train and then closes herself into the train booth, Aster looks at her with a smile and asks Ellie if she wants to come with her. Ellie agrees, and Aster takes her to her favorite secret place, a natural hot springs.
Secrets.
Aster strips off her clothes and gets into the water, and Ellie immediately gets self-conscious and turns around asking nervously, "Are these deciduous trees?" as she looks at some evergreens. The answer is no. Deciduous trees lose all their leaves, but I'm sure Ellie knew that already. Aster turns around so that Ellie can have some privacy to get into the water, and Ellie strips off her jacket, but not really much else. When Aster turns around, Ellie's in the water with all her clothes on, but maybe not her pants, including the t-shirt that she had on top of her long underwear shirt. Aster talks about how she overheard Trigg talking to her dad about getting married. She says, "He hasn't asked me, but I don't know. Maybe I should." Ellie makes a face and Aster asks, "You think I shouldn't? I've been asking God for a sign, and then Paul's letter appeared in my locker." Ellie shares, "I don't believe in God." And Aster replies, "That sounds nice." But Ellie disagrees. "It's not. It feels lonely." Aster goes on that the letters are the first time she's felt really seen, and Ellie understands. They have a connection, one that she can't overtly admit, but she sees her. Aster, possibly trying to lighten the mood, slowly moves to Ellie with the sly look on her face, and then starts tugging at Ellie's clothes. Ellie squirms. "What are you doing?" Aster is incredulous. "How many layers do you have on?" And Ellie replies uncomfortably, "I'm a Russian doll of clothing." Brandy Pond from Let's Go to Court would be proud. Maybe she has an emotional support cami on too.
Oh, yeah.
Next, we see Ellie and Aster floating on their backs in the water. Ellie still has her long underwear shirt on, but Aster's wearing Ellie's yellow outer layer t-shirt. They're floating, touching forehead to forehead as, "If you leave me now, you take away the best part of me," plays over them. Ooh. Ellie says, "Gravity is matter's response to loneliness." Aster asks, "Who said that?" Ellie doesn't know, so Aster bequeaths it as an Ellieism. They are still until, "How could we let it slip away?" plays, and their foreheads slowly drift apart in the water. They get further and further away, and Ellie admits, "My mom loved this song. She said every song had a best part." The instrumental bridge plays, and it's a good one. I listened to it twice. When Aster asks, "Was that it?" Ellie responds, "You asking or saying?" And Ellie says softly, "That was it." Aww. Their bodies shift in the water, and when we see them again, Ellie's head is practically cradled in the crook of Aster's neck. Oh, it was such a romantic little scene over that stupid song.
Oh my gosh, and Aster was looking at Ellie with fuck me eyes, and Ellie was looking at Aster like a deer in the headlights, and I was like,
yeah,
this is like the most sexual tension without anything happening in a scene that I have like seen.
That's why I'm like, their heads are together. Now their heads are apart. Now their heads are together again. That's the most action we get.
But it's like hot. I'm like, oh, I'm feeling feelings.
While Ellie was hanging out in the hot springs with Paul.
Paul.
I know.
Aster. Sorry, my mistake.
Yeah. I was like, wait, when did that happen? When did they go to the hot springs? They go to the hot springs after Aster went to the hot springs? Did they take Paul at French? No, that didn't happen. Okay, got it. While Ellie was hanging out at the hot springs with Aster, Paul came over to Ellie's house with a couple of bags of meat for her dad, and the two of them bond and do something. It seems as if Papa Chew is slamming the meat into a bowl, and Paul follows suit, but looks on nervously as his dad does it 2 to 3 more times. Hashtag meat bonding. When Ellie comes back home, her dad says to her, "Paul made a braised pork sausage. It's pretty tasty. Yours is in the microwave." And then we find out that Paul and Ellie's dad made sausage together. Hashtag sausage fest.
Aww.
Somebody make me braised pork sausage, please.
And if you want to make it into a taco sausage, we're not complaining. Can you imagine, like, with some slaw on top of that?
Stop it. I'm not hungry. I swear I'm not hungry.
The crunch.
All this talk about sausage snacks at 10 o'clock at night is not helping Corinne.
So, Miss I'm Not Hungry, Ellie heads upstairs and flops on the bed, marveling at her day. We do not see her eat braised pork sausage while we think that we should, but that's okay. She then gets up and looks out her window. Across the way, Paul and Aster are talking. Aster asks Paul if he believes in God, and he immediately says, "Yes, of course." And Aster looks saddened by this. He follows his statement with, "I got your painting. It was pretty." She looks at him processing, and I think silently comparing Ellie's response to the painting to his response to the painting.
Well, that is like apples and oranges, correct? The stroke is lonely. I like what you've done here. Your painting's pretty.
Practically the same. What are you talking about?
I know. It's just the same critique with just different wording. That's all. Absolutely. 100%.
Her gaze shifts. The KISS tractor beam is on, and she goes for the KISS. Ellie sees this and stumbles away from the window, knocking into her guitar case and revealing an application to Grinnell College? Secret hopes and dreams. It's the day of the big game, and Aster texts Ellie, good luck. Ellie passes the message on to Paul, and Paul responds, you'll be there, right? Ellie assures him, can't wait to see a bunch of guys sniffing each other's butts. And we're at the game, and the Squamish Moose football team are apparently stanky, like real stanky. It's the first quarter, and they're already down by 49 points. Wow. Paul is on the field, scanning the stands, and he waves at Aster. He then looks around some more and sees Ellie. She waves at him, but she's also keeping an eye on the game. She suddenly starts gesturing to Paul, and he keeps waving at her. She gestures more emphatically, mouthing, behind you. He turns around just in time to receive the ball and run towards the correct goal and make a touchdown. I was afraid that he was going to make a touchdown to the wrong goal. He did not.
Yes, he did not.
Apparently, the first score that the team has made in 15 fucking years.
Ouch. I would fire the coaching staff. I would say that that is worse than a dry spell, that they really don't have their work cut out for them. Perhaps they've never played football before.
They show up to the field with lacrosse nets and they're like, we're ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to incorporate lacrosse into as many movies as possible. Don't mind me.
Great job. You're Thank doing you. A great job Thank of you. It. Corinne's lacrosse awareness.
I may be here for lacrosse awareness, but I am telling you now, in spite of that, in football town of Squamish Moose Meese, Paul is now officially a hero.
The game is finished. Most everyone has cleared out, and Ellie has snuck into the boys' locker room and is raiding the free football players' vending machine for all the occult she can carry. Paul finds her there and says, oh, you didn't have to grab me a occult. Ellie's confused for a moment and then says, oh, yeah, you can have one. But Paul doesn't want one. Ellie does, so she makes Paul give her a hit. He pours one into her mouth, and then Paul, bless his silly little heart, tries to kiss her, which causes her to dump the 10 bottles of liquid yogurt containers onto the locker room floor. Back away and ask, what are you doing? Paul's confused. You don't want me to kiss you? And the experts from ODK agree that she had definitely not turned on her KISS tractor beam.
Correct.
Poor Paul's confused and not great at reading bodily cues, I'd say. He also felt a connection with Ellie that was intimate and close. Does it have to be sexual? No. But he was never taught that. Paul continues, what, is there someone else? And Ellie turns to see Aster standing in the doorway. She pleads with her, Aster, this isn't what you think. Aster, I swear. And Paul looks between the two of them as Aster runs off. And suddenly it dawns on him. Wait, you like Aster? That's a sin. You're going to hell.
Oof.
Oh, God. Paul, damn it. Damn it, Paul.
I know.
He leaves, and Ellie also leaves, and looks miserable as she sadly walks her bike back home in the dark. The basket, not full of occult. Damn it.
I know.
I would have picked those bottles up so I didn't leave empty-handed.
Mm-hmm. Both you and me would have totally been sneaking into that locker room to get the free whatever.
Yes. Especially if it's something that we had to bike 3 hours away to get otherwise.
Yes. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
We'd be doing some breaking in shenanigan shit to get that stuff. Okay, I'm going to hoist you up. We're going to cut through the glass on the top floor. Gently pull it out. And then zip line across.
Yes.
Anywho, Yelly, Yakult and Ellie. Yelly. Ellie is just ready to be home after the fucking day she's had, but as she walks in front of her house, out of the shadows appears...
Oh, God.
Trig?
Oh, God, I forgot about
Trig? Trig, Lord, help us all. He cockily approaches her and says, I'm on to you, Ellie Chu.
Oh.
You have a crush on me. Ellie, who's done as fuck at this moment, flatly responds, "Yes, Trig, I have a crush on you." He comes closer to her. "I knew it." And leans forward. And I'm not really sure if he's going to go for it. Let her down easy, but we don't get to find out because Ellie's dad, in a singular act of heroism, sprays Trig with the kitchen sink sprayer through the kitchen window. Trig is pissed, but he also must defend his cashmere sweater and makes a hasty retreat.
Oh, that was beautiful. I was like, dad, hero.
Finally, dialed into something your daughter's going through.
Seriously. The next section I title, "Things Are All Fucked Up." And the accompanying quote is, "Hell is other people, Sartre."
It sure is. Boy, howdy.
Post-football game, things are sucky for Paul. Even though he is now the high school hero, there is a fucking banner in the, like, giant banner across the hall with, like, a picture of him in the middle and his name across it. He's the town celebrity. Things are also sucky for Aster because what the fuck is going on? And sucky for Ellie because she actually really appreciated her friendship with Paul, and now that seems to be gone, along with her vicarious relationship with Aster. You don't win a car, you don't win a car, and you don't win a car.
Nobody wins a car.
This is not the mega happy ending that Tamara hopes for.
Oh, but it's not over.
Oh, no, it's not over, because Paul goes home and Googles on the family computer, "How do you know you are a gay?" And he starts reading an article about how to figure out if you're gay, but he gets called to take out the trash. So he quickly blacks out the screen on the computer, but does not close the browser window. So I'm guessing Paul is in for some awkward interactions with his mom after she sees the webpage he has been looking at. Ha ha ha.
Fun.
And to be clear, Paul is not a gay.
No, but... also kind of sweet that he's trying to figure out his friend,
yeah,
Ellie, because absolutely. I'm sure he's like, "I know my church says you're going to hell and it's wrong, but let me look elsewhere for answers."
Yeah, and like, what is being gay anyways? Like, yeah, I love that he's trying to figure this out. I think it's very sweet.
Me too. Several days later, Paul drops by Ellie's kitchen and drops off a monthly delivery of meat to Ellie's dad. He plops the meat onto the stove and says, "See you next month," and tries to make a hasty retreat, but Ellie's dad stops him. "Paul," he says slowly and carefully, "did you and Ellie break up?" Paul shakes his head. "No, we weren't together," her dad confesses. "She seems sad."
Aww.
Paul looks down. "You don't see who Ellie is." They stand across from each other in a small dark kitchen, a soft amber light partially lighting things. Ellie's dad speaks softly in Mandarin to Paul, even though he can't understand him, and says, "When my wife died, I was a mess. I didn't know what to do with myself. Ellie was 13, and a few days later, I woke up and found that she was in the booth manning the switch. She looked up and saw me, and I smiled, seeing her. She looked so young, but was already an adult." Paul continues to look at him and doesn't quite know how to respond, and Ellie's dad switches to English. "Have you ever loved someone so much you didn't want them to change?" Paul nods his head slightly, and we cut to the next scene.
Whew. That was like such a moment.
Initially, when they were talking about Ellie's dad, they weren't really clear about how much time had passed.
Yeah.
So I'm picturing Ellie being like on her own since she was like 9 or 10.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, she was 13. So what? She's like 17 now, 14, 15, 16, 17. Yeah. I mean, he's still mourning it, but it seems more reasonable to me than like leaving a little girl to her own devices and having to take care of him.
Yeah. It's church time. And after a dirge-like rendition of "Holy, holy, holy," it was very slow. Trig stands up from his pew in front of the congregation to do that Sunday's reading. He says, "Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. Which is why I love this little lady and why she'll make a fantastic wife.
I want to ask Trig why he loves Aster. Can somebody tell me why Trig loves Aster? Because she's amicable and basically will do whatever he wants to do.
She's pretty. Like, he doesn't have three reasons. It's like, she's pretty.
She's pretty. She's pretty. She's pretty.
Yeah. He also loves her because she does not boast. She is not proud. That's why he loves that little lady.
Okay.
And nothing's more like heartwarming than being called a little lady. Aster is looking on with a not me, not me, not me look on her face. And then Trig gestures over towards Aster and says, Aster, will you? And Aster blinks at him and then stands, does the slightest of nods, blinks some more, and starts approaching his outstretched hand as the congregation bursts into applause. But Aster's journey is halted by Ellen yelling from the choir loft, No! The organ's up there. There's no choir, but the organ's up there. She yells from the roost in the balcony above the congregation, and the congregation is suddenly silent. They all shift in their seats to look up at her. Ellie stammers, love isn't... Aster's dad, the pastor extraordinaire, interrupts her, saying, Thank you, Ellie. And Paul pops out of his seat. Love isn't pretending. I know because I've been pretending for a few months and it sucks. And I've been thinking about how much it sucks to have to pretend to be not you your whole life. I always thought that there was one way to love, but now I realize that there are so many different ways to love. And I don't want to be the guy that stops loving someone because of the way they love. Oh, he's talking about Ellie. It's all sweet. Ellie's face is filled with pain and sadness, and she stands there silently as Aster's dad tries to take back control of his service, but Ellie has been inspired by Paul. I've been pretending too, Trig jumps in. Don't worry, everyone. I think I know where this is going, and Ellie, I want to clarify. Ellie interrupts. Trig, I've been writing your papers for the last 4 years, so I'm just going to rewrite you this one last time. Love isn't patient, kind, and humble. Love is messy and horrible and selfish. She descends down the stairs from the balcony into the congregation. Love isn't finding your perfect half. It's trying, reaching, failing. Love is being willing to ruin your good painting for the chance at a great one. Ellie addresses Aster directly. Is this really the boldest stroke you can make? Aster is standing, looking at Paul, who is still standing, and looking at Ellie, who is standing. Everybody's standing. They're all standing. They stand.
He stands. She stands. They stand.
And Aster finally puts it together, she says sadly with a tinge of anger to Ellie, you, and Ellie affirms this. Aster walks up to Paul, slaps him good, whew, walks past Ellie and out the door. The congregants of the church explode in a murmur of conversation and theories to each other, and Trig, who is still standing, exclaims, wait, so I'm the good painting? Paul stands in his pew, sadly witnessing everything, his cheek stinging from the recent slap when his mom pops up next to him and says fiercely, Mommy wants you to know, in case you're gay, Mommy still loves you. Paul confesses, I'm not gay, Mom. His mom sighs, Thank God. But, Paul continues, I may want to change our sausage recipes, though. His mom's face falls. Are you insane? I love that recipe. She starts whacking Paul with her purse, and suddenly, all the congregants are telling each other their raw truths, and it's chaos. And Mrs. G sits off to the side, witnessing everything. She's got her pocket popcorn out and is munching away, exclaiming to herself with satisfaction, Now this is some divine intervention.
Ellie comes home to her dad, making a huge amount of pot stickers. Food for her journey to Grinnell College. He lets his daughter know, We didn't come here so you could be like me. We came here so you could be like your mom. Ellie stands companionably next to her dad and starts helping. And it's really sweet. Letters flash across the screen. Love is messy and horrible and selfish, ... and bold. Ellie Chu.
Yay!
Ellie waits for Aster outside of her waitressing job. When Aster comes out, she coolly tells her she's busy. But Ellie apologizes anyways, clarifying, I never meant to hurt you. It was only supposed to be one letter. Aster pauses and then says, you know, I probably actually knew. I just wasn't willing to admit it to myself.
Mm-hmm.
The conversation slowly warms between them, and Ellie's pleased to find out that Aster is applying to art school. Ellie lets Aster know that she's leaving for Grinnell shortly, and Aster confesses, for what it's worth, it's not like the thought never crossed my mind. If things were different, if I were different... Ellie starts walking with her back and says mockingly, you could never be different. Am I sure I'm different? How do I know I'm sure? What does God think? Aster falls for her baiting remarks and follows after her. Hey, I can be sure. You watch. In a couple of years, I'm going to be so sure. Ellie stops facing her while chuckling good-naturedly. Good luck with that, Aster responds warmly. Good luck in Iowa, heathen. I hope you find something to believe in. They part ways, but Ellie stops in her tracks. A realization washes over her face, and she runs back to Aster and kisses her. Her realization, fuck it, I got nothing to lose. I'm heading out of this sausage stand. And the kiss is a good one, and has seemingly rocked Aster's world as she looks on dazed and surprised, and the little hearts in her eyes follow Ellie as she gets back on her bike and yells over her shoulder, see you in a couple years, riding away triumphantly. Pineapple emoji, owl emoji, caterpillar with glasses emoji. That quote flashes across the scene from various sources.
I would say Paul. Ellie's leaving...
I would say Paul, probably.
Yeah.
Probably Paul, possibly. Ellie's leaving for Grinnell. She stands in front of the stopped train. Her dad stares out the window at her and waves, and Paul presents her with a cooler full of dad-made pot stickers. Paul promises to keep an eye on her dad, and she congratulates him on the write-up in the town crier. He excitedly says, yeah, Munsky sausage is going to blow up. I may get to Iowa before you. Still, was there some reference to Iowa earlier in the movie? Because why would you want to go from Washington to Iowa?
Because that's where Grinnell College is.
Okay. But I mean, why would he want him and his sausages to go to Iowa? I would think they'd want to go anywhere but another small town.
Because that's where Ellie is. His bestie.
Okay. I know. I'm just like, Iowa? No, honey. I'll meet you afterwards. Okay. In 4 years? You're done in 4 years? Okay. We'll meet up then.
Gentle listeners, if you're in Iowa, we love you and your state. Weeky, weeky.
I don't care. Yeah, what she said. Ellie gets a sly smile on her face and texts him pineapple emoji, owl emoji, caterpillar with glasses emoji. He looks at the text stating, that caterpillar does look smart. And she teases, too smart to be crying in front of the train like a wussy. He's indignant. I'm not crying. She teases as she walks onto the train. Wussy! She finds her seat and mouths, wussy! Out the window at Paul. He chuckles, and for the first time ever, she's on the train riding away from her house. As the train picks up speed and she's off, Paul runs after her. At first she's embarrassed, and then she laughs as he runs to try to keep up, and then cries at the expression of his love. Once he's no longer in view... She smiles to herself and says, moron. And with that, she's off on her way to a new life adventure in Iowa. I accidentally put Idaho, but I knew what I meant.
Oh, I put Idaho. Yeah.
Okay. It's Iowa, Idaho. It's something with an I. We don't know. No one knows. No one ever knows. So the end, Corinne, who's not looking at me, Corinne.
I know. Corinne. I was just confirming that it's in Iowa, the college. Yes. Yes, Pam.
Well,
what?
Is it in Iowa?
Yes, it is in Iowa.
Okay, now that we've established that, yeah. Great. How many dry kisses would you give the half of it?
I give it 2.25 dry kisses because it's half. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God. Holy shit. Wow, I thought you were serious. I was like, are you fucking shitting me right now?
No, I give this 4.5 dry kisses. I think it's a beautiful movie. It's diverse. It has layers. It has different kinds of love represented in it. And it has characters having like different growth arcs over time. I'm here for it. My heart is full from watching this movie, and listening to you and your takes on it just like gave me further appreciation for it as well. So yeah. How many dry kisses do you give the half of it? 2 1/4?
This movie made me realize that, yes, 2 1/4. 2.5, I'll have you know. 2.5 dry kisses. Oh. Yes. Which times 2 makes 5. 5 dry kisses.
Yes.
Because I realized that there is one thing that I love more than a mega happy ending, and that is a hopeful ending.
Aww.
Which this movie has a very hopeful ending for Paul, for Aster, and for Ellie. It's open-ended. The world is their oyster. It's full of possibilities. It can go in so many good ways. And that just warmed my heart more than I expected. I also love the relationships between Ellie and Paul was probably like my favorite thing in the movie.
Yeah.
Because you can see it grow and evolve over time. And it just turns into this beautiful thing that's even more beautiful than their love for Aster to me.
Yes.
And how she's an immigrant and feels stuck in Squamish, but she's an outsider. And he was like born and raised in Squamish and he still feels stuck. So even though they're vastly different, they still kind of have the same problems for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
They're not seen or understood by the people that love them the most. Well, for the most part.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think the love story that I love the most is theirs. The beautiful relationship between Paul and Ellie. And then have that run alongside their growing affection for Aster. Well, not so much Paul because he starts liking Ellie, but Ellie finding her other half kind of person and realizing the potential of love that's out there and like her eyes opening to what could be and then acting on it and then going off to college to, you know, find herself and her life and to make her mark in the world. It was a beautiful movie, and I don't know why I didn't appreciate it more the first time I watched it, because the second time I watched it, I'm like, oh my god, this thing is amazing. I'm probably gonna have to put this on the rotation and watch it every time it comes on again.
Seriously, it's got so many beautiful layers in it, and I love the relationship between Paul and Ellie's dad as well.
Yeah,
I found that to be super touching.
That's what I was asking them. I'm like, okay, so he dropped off a shit ton of sausage that towards the end, and I'm guessing because they've got like a strong bond now, but because before they were eating frozen chicken pot pies.
Yeah.
So I doubt that he was dropping sausage off then.
Yeah.
So dad got the sausage hookup because of their friendship, which also is a nice bonus, I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Being a sausage aficionado and fan myself, I appreciated that too. So all in all, love the story. Beautiful, beautiful love story, beautiful friendship story. Beautiful, hopeful story. I give it 5 dry kisses.
And then I have a fantasy about 2 years later, Ellie and Aster, like, kind of reuniting and then, like, falling madly in love with each other.
Uh-huh. And eventually getting married. And then Paul's the officiant.
Oh.
Because him and Ellie are best friends at this point.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Well, they're totally best friends for sure. But yes. You absolutely know they're still, like, writing each other. Like, they're... Like, Ellie keeps on getting, like, random emoji texts from him, and she, and she, like, writes messages back to him. Ugh. Now, I have a whole fantasy life for them that lives in my head.
So there you go, Corinne. You could just get with the director, write the sequel. It'll be the other half of it, and you could just, like, play out your fantasy in movie form.
Oh, my gosh. This is what I've been missing, This is why all my dating hasn't worked up. I've just been waiting. It's all been building to this moment. Oh, so Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we have the 80s icon classic, Working Girl.
Oh, my God. I loved this movie so much growing up, and the Carly Simon song to yell along with her.
I cannot understand half of what you said, but okay.
Obviously, I picked this movie. Yes.
Really, I couldn't tell. You're very unenthusiastic about it.
Let the river flow. Yes. Yes. So, if you have anything that you'd like to say about the half of it, Working Girl, Layers, Alice Wu, anything else, you can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com. Are you a gay? I don't know. Share. You can also reach out to us via text. No, we are not giving out our phone numbers.
I'm all, oh, Corinne, I think that's a bad idea, and I will not be participating.
Neither will I. Via the social medias on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. Have you left us a rating or a review? Maybe you should take this time out, the next few seconds, to just hop on that little iPad, phone, or computer of yours and write out what you think of One Dry Kiss, if it's good. If it's not good,
typey.
We're so sorry, and we apologize, and we'll try to do better next time. But we'd appreciate any ratings or reviews you'd give us.
5 stars.
But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. See you next time.
See you next time. You know what I just thought of?
What's that?
You know that Reese Witherspoon movie where she's like a ghost in the house with like the Napoleon Dynamite? Not the Napoleon, with Mark Ruffalo in it. And I was like, yes. Halloween?
Yes. Oh my God. What's that movie called? Just Like Heaven.
Just Like Heaven. Yes. Okay. Anyways, that is totally getting cut, but definitely a movie we should do sometime.
You leave that shit in there. I remember the name of the movie. Okay, put it on the outtakes then. I want credit.
Yes, you will get all the credit.